This time in the Magic Kitchen, we're discussing symbolism and folklore in witchcraft. I'm Leander Witchwood.
And I'm Elise Wells.
And welcome to the Magic Kitchen podcast, where we talk about magic, kitchen witchcraft, herbs,
and everything in between.
Welcome back to the Magic Kitchen podcast. What have you been up to, Elise? Tell us. I know you've been up to a lot.
I know. I don't know what. I had the amazing opportunity to drive a car back from France to Greece. And nice. I just didn't we drive farther distances in America, like for good ice cream, but 30 hours of driving through, that's 9 countries in Europe. So it was a really whirlwind adventure that I didn't think I would be ready for, but it was one of those cool opportunities I didn't want to say no to either. And I'm really glad I did it. First off, I learned that driving in Europe is easy. Like even countries you wouldn't think would be, like you'd think there'd be like a learning curve or an adaptation of like certain countries drive differently than others. It really wasn't. Like, I used to drive on the Beltway in Baltimore, and people say that Bulgarians and Serbians are, like, speed demons. It's absolutely no different than the Beltway.
So obviously, they've never been in Baltimore on 695.
Yeah, exactly. That is the comparable experience. So okay. I felt fine. That's there. Nothing. And then, so that was a big weight off my mind. And then I also had the angering realization as an American that countries like Serbia that are economically poorly developed actually have fantastic infrastructure in comparison to the United States. So that part was also a delight to drive through, but angering as a taxpayer in the United States. So I was like, really? Like Serbia, Seriously. Serbia has better roads than the US. Yeah. So, but anyway, spiritually, I was very immersed in land spirits as I traveled in a very different way because I've never had the chance to drive that way. Like I didn't have a plan. Like I had a river cruise booked, my first ever river cruise. It was really fun. And I recommend them to people who want to travel, but they're not sure how to plan it. River cruises are a great way to get to places that you might need a car for if you don't, and not everybody is comfortable driving in a new country. So loved it. And I started in the Netherlands. Then we went through Belgium. Then we ended in Paris. And that's why I signed up to do the car when I did, because it just flowed really well with that. So I just flew one way to Amsterdam and after the river cruise, picked up the car. And it was really exciting to see Europe that way, to have the chance to say, you know what? I really like this land. I'm going to spend an extra night here and then take my time. Like my trip was supposed to end like June 1st. Like I taught my Connecting to Land Spirits workshop from Bulgaria on June 3rd because I ended up still traveling. Yeah. And actually, Bulgaria, better internet than Greece. These are the things you don't expect to learn. Right. So that was a really nice trip. It was just so different. Like I highly recommend something like that if you want to see Europe and you're not sure how to see as much as possible, drive. You can. It's not as crazy as it sounds, apparently, because some of the local folks, like my friends in Greece that I told about it, they were like, yeah, okay, have fun.
Yeah,
I was like, it's not that crazy. It seems crazy. Yeah. Like I'm driving across 9 countries. But it was so much fun. It was so much fun. Yeah. And it was nice to see places that you can't take public transport to, like these very rural areas. There were lavender fields in Hungary that rivaled the best of them in France. There were fields of sage. Sage is something we think of as like either a wild plant in the Mediterranean or we think of it as like a sacred plant. But in Hungary, they have retained almost ancient, probably ancient, but the fields I saw were 1,000 years old.
Wow. You know,
that were just for harvesting sage for medicine. Nice. And not for like Pfizer. Like it was an abbey that has existed since 996. And these fields have been there since that time.
That's amazing.
It was just so powerful. It was so powerful. So actually my next workshop is on July 22nd. And it's taking connecting to land spirits to different heights. It's part two to my first workshop I just hosted on the 3rd. And if you missed that and you'd like it, just email me or message me on Instagram. I'm happy to get you that. It's the next one is spirit-led travel, meeting new spirits of place and land. Because that's like part two to connecting with land spirits anyway, because we have this chance at home to get to know a spirit that we're always amongst. But then when we go to a new place, how do you calibrate to that energy?
Yeah.
And also, how do you bring your spirits of home with you so you don't get homesick? Right. That's really where I came from with it first, was learning when I was a kid and an expat moving to Bahrain and growing up in the Middle East, very different from Pennsylvania. So how could I bring it with me? And at first I thought it was the stuff. But then I learned it was the memories. So part of this workshop will also be dealing with homesickness and bringing the essence and spirit of a place with you.
Sounds great. I love it.
So what's new?
How's your new with me?
Yeah.
Well, in the Rebel Mystic community, I'm super excited because we just did our most recent mentoring with the community, where I sit down with the community and we talk about the stuff we love, magic, tools, crafting, that sort of thing. And this month we're focused on candle magic. And so we went over dressing candles, carving candles, how to infuse these candles with herbs and the essence of the spell and make it work for you. And so coming up, that's going to lead to our ritual this month, which is candle magic. And we're going to use candle magic for protection. And so I've sent out all the kits. Everybody's got their tea, their candles. And I'm super excited because this gives us the active, participatory, actionable element of learning. Not just learning about it and tucking it away, but we're going to actually use the knowledge that I offer. So if you're not already a member, I highly recommend it. Like, get in there. Next month, we are going to focus on oil making. So magical crafting is going to be our theme. And in the ritual, we're going to make a magical oil for ourselves. So that's July. And this month, I also had the opportunity to be part of the York County Pride event, which was amazing. So many, I love these events. I love the Pride community, the LGBTQ plus community, because I will be honest, like, it is the one and only community where, as a female, as a woman in our culture, I feel safe. If that makes any sense. Like, I don't feel like there's a creeper around the corner or that I am going to be harmed in some way. Everybody looks out for each other. Everybody honors one another. It's so inclusive that it really is it's a testament to what our society could and should be. And I was just so excited to be a part of it because there's so many wonderful people. Just everybody I talked to was wonderful. All the performances were great. And, you know, I love seeing the costumes and the makeup and just feeling the energy of total inclusivity. And that was amazing. And I wish that was every day. I really do.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Pride Month is such a beautiful time because I miss it more. I love it more because I miss it because in Greece, like, it's not illegal to be gay, but because 98% of people here are Greek Orthodox, the church has a huge say in how people feel about things.
Gotcha.
So even the friends I have that are gay, they'll tell their friends, but they can't tell their family. No, and that's horrible. And then even if they have a committed relationship, they can't move in with them. They can't. Well, they could, you know, but under what conditions? Are going to – it's a small town. Even Athens, a big city that it is, half of all Greeks live in Athens. It's still you're watched, you know, people here are very in each other's business, very nosy. It's a cultural thing. Like, it's true. Like, yeah. That sounds generalized, but like, for the Greeks listening, like, they're like, yep, Yaya's always over there across the road, looking at her. Like, I literally have a friend who has this old lady who spies on her that she will hide under a blanket, but it's like comical. It's literally like in like animated cartoons, how they lift like the Dracula cloak over their face. Like, that's how she spies on her at night. Like, at night, like, she'll go out for a cigarette at like 3 a.m. and like see her there. She's a night owl.
That's crazy. And
she's like watching her. It's the weirdest thing. It's a weird cultural thing. But Pride Month is unfortunately not here yet. So,
oh man. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so those of you in countries that have it, you should really cherish it and protect that right. Protect our trans kids. Protect the people that are feeling marginalized. Because of course, even in America, there are more than enough bigots keeping people from feeling safe. But stand up and be a part of the change.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that they didn't that they decided to like double down on this event. So they moved it completely indoors. They had metal detectors. They had police patrolling. So it was incredibly safe in that aspect, too. So they, instead of allowing the zealots that are looking to harm people that are in this community and supporters of this community, instead of giving into them, they said, no, you are not going to have access to us. And as far as I know, like outside, I wasn't able to be outside. I was inside most of the time. Like, we didn't have any protests. We didn't have any issues. Nobody tried to harm anybody, but they were also very diligent in making sure that anybody who entered those buildings were there for the right reason. And
that's beautiful.
I appreciate that so much, because there's no reason that this community should not be able to express itself. And maybe I get angry about it, and maybe I'm a little more vocal about it, because as a witch, and I think all witches should really look at this, as a witch, we know what it's like to be persecuted for who we are and what we believe and how we live our lives. So for us as witches to not look at that injustice, whether it be LGBTQ, people of color, you name it, even religion, even other religions that are demonized by a secular group. If we are looking the other way and not standing up to be inclusive, then we're not walking our path. And that is my personal opinion. That is my conviction in my life, in my experience, and in my encounters, that if we're going to claim the title of witch and we're not being inclusive to other marginalized groups, then we are hypocrites. And I know I'm going to piss some people off about that, but I don't care. Because if you are calling yourself a witch, then you better act like a witch. I'm going to drop the mic right there.
Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride Month. The Magic Kitchen Podcast is funded and supported by thewitchwoodteahouse.com, offering a variety of hand-blended loose leaf teas, as well as loose herbs for all of your ritual, spell work, wellness, and everyday enjoyment needs. If you would like to support this podcast while sipping a great cup of tea, head over to thewitchwoodteahouse.com and find the magic that's in store for you.
Symbolism is used heavily in witchcraft, and for a lot of us, we come to the craft because we're called by a certain symbol. Many of us, it's the pentagram, and then we learn that it represents the five elements, and that might really draw us in. So we wanted to talk about how you can use symbolism in your craft, and what symbolism can do for you, and the different meanings that certain symbols might have. And again, like always, we're coming at this from our individual practices and paths. We're going to talk about the different cultural meanings and perspectives behind certain symbols, and folklore is so tied up in that, you know, the myths of a particular culture could have led to a particular association with a certain animal or a certain color. So it's going to be a look through history as well when we talk about symbols, anytime we talk about symbols.
So I think where I want to start is with the divine archetypes, maiden, mother, crone. Those are the ones we're most familiar with. And if you've been following any of my work, I tend to go much, much deeper, much farther with that into the divine feminine, where we have the archetype of the warrior, the child, the queen, the primordial goddess, and you know, it you almost infinitely be broken up into these different pockets of symbols for this one entity that is a feminine representation of energy. And so when I first started, the maiden, mother, crone, of course, was what I was introduced to, which is, you know, akin to the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And instantly, I felt like it didn't fit. So when we're working with symbolisms, we have to like really look at how they are structured for us, because sometimes it doesn't make sense for us. So we're not going to force ourselves to adhere to a symbol when it doesn't work, when it doesn't feel right, when it doesn't quite resonate. So I started expanding on the idea of the human experience, the spiritual experience, the natural experience. We have life, death, rebirth, but we also have gestation, which is a time for contemplation. So I had to expand it. And then there's a point where we reach totality, where we reach wholeness. It might not be something that sticks permanently, but it's something we kind of flux in between. It's that sense of balance that we try to obtain. And that's when I looked at the symbolism as becoming a whole. So look at it as, you know, the moon phases is another symbol for how we ebb and flow in this world. And, you know, life, death, rebirth, maiden, mother, crone. We have all of these different cycles that we move through. And it's not something that is static. It's not linear.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake a lot of newer witches make, is that there's one answer for what a symbol means, and that if it doesn't mean that, then, you know, move on. You're missing something, so you messed up. And that's just never true. Wrong. Yeah, yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, a lot of times, like, I have always identified more with crone energy. My whole life. I'm an old soul. People will call it that. But I also, you know, most of my friends are a good bit older than me. My favorite job ever was working at J. Jill, because I got to connect with amazing, you know, elders, people who had lived and done things that, you know, I was 19 when I had that job. So, you know, I had a lot of life ahead of me. So it was, I've just always resonated with that. But I'm not a crone, you know, and I'm also not a mother. But I don't know, maiden seems a bit reductive. So sometimes, you know, we take these symbols too literally, and we worry that we can't fit into them, and so we ignore them because we can't. But really, symbols are just a guide. They're just a conversation starter. They're just a way to get your feet wet. And, you know, we've done a whole episode on the aspects of the goddess, so we won't go into all the different divine archetypes for her now, but that's just one example of you take the meaning when it needs to come to you. And if it's not coming to you, then it's not your time for that symbol, and that's okay.
Right. Right. Or maybe it's underlining, and it's not part of your spectrum yet. You know, like you said, it's not part of your path just yet. It's not something you need to focus on just yet.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we can't learn from it. We can't learn from the symbolism, the ideals and the morals and the lessons these other aspects teach us. Like your time spending with our older population, you know, you probably learned a lot. You probably learned a lot of history that's not written down. You probably learned a lot of just how our country, or how these people lived life, that and how it's different to how you were currently living life, or our current perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really key thing when we go into these symbolisms, we go into mythology, we go into identifying which symbols work for us and speak directly to us, is that we start learning more about our path, about what things mean to our individual journey.
Yeah. And there's something that happens when You're open to symbols. I have a story about this recently. I keep seeing hairs everywhere. Like, not human hairs, but like H-A-R-E-S, like the big white bunnies. And
okay.
And it's, and we're recording this just after Easter. So you might say, at least it was Easter, like there's going to be bunnies around. Like, no, it wasn't like that. Like, I took a tour to the Temple of Artemis and they had a new portion of their exhibit. Some of the stuff that they can't always keep out in the museum, where it showed Artemis with rabbits. And I'd never noticed these pieces or seen this symbolism. Then I was in the park another time and there's a statue of a girl holding a hare. And then I came across a poem that was a retelling of Alice in Wonderland. And it focused on like how the hare symbolized her accepting the path. Like the hare was like her test. Ah. It was like her Gandalf, you know, her knocking on the door. What's the Campbell's? Joseph Campbell, he's got the cycle of the story.
Yeah.
The hero's journey. Yeah. The second moment you have the person who comes and makes you go on the journey.
Yes.
And I was like, that's interesting.
Nope. Yeah.
and it just made me realize, like, I think that's my sign. Like, that's the universe telling me, you know, take my hand. We're going to go on a journey. Are you ready for it? So I'm preparing myself for the next sign of some new part of my journey. I have no clue what it could be, but that's how I'm taking all these random hair messages that I keep seeing. And it's not rabbits. Yeah. It's different. They're the big white hairs.
And just to add on to that, so you and I both have had formal training within a coven, within groups. So I think there's something to touch on here, because I feel like so many newer witches, even experienced witches out there, have this like apprehension or like a deficit almost in their ability to read the symbols and connect with these symbols. You know, they're constantly asking other people what these symbols mean. And I really think that I only say this because this was my experience, is when I was by myself learning from books, learning from YouTube, or learning from, well, kind of before YouTube, but learning from just other sources other than a structure. There was a lot of self-doubt there. There was a lot of unknown confirmation, because I didn't know how to confirm it for myself, because I didn't have the support behind me to remind me of my ability to read the symbols. So I see a lot of witches out there just almost floundering because they can't grasp that these symbols are coming to them and that they mean something. Where I think if you have a structure, a coven structure, a lesson structure, someone teaching you and reaffirming to you and supporting you on your journey, that it's easier to accept that these symbols mean something to your path.
It might sound like a paradox, but traveling to new places is often more grounding than staying home. If you're nervous to be out of your comfort zone and would like to travel, but you're not sure how it fits into your life, or if you're somebody who does travel but wants to get the most out of it, this is the workshop for you. Join me July 22nd at noon EDT for Spirit-Led Travel, Connecting with New Spirits of Place and Land. Early bird tickets are on sale until July 6th, and get a recording of the workshop when you buy a ticket as well. You can find this event on my Eventbrite, on seekingnumina.com, and of course in the show notes below. Learn how to connect to spirit of place anywhere and how that can deepen your connection to home. We want to talk about some common symbols, but before we do, I just wanted to give you a definition for symbology versus symbolism. So symbology ends in logi, coming from the Greek word logos, meaning study of. So symbology is kind of what this episode is. It's a study on symbolism. And symbolism is the concept of something standing or representing something else. So other ways we can look at symbolism is allegory, This is the English teacher in me giving you those lovely literary devices you probably had to memorize and rolled your eyes at. So it could be allegory. For example, a popular myth that we take quite literally today is Zeus's conquests, we'll call it, of many different women.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. And we roll our eyes and we're like, ew, he's so gross. Like, he's, you know, should be on some list somewhere where he has to knock on all his neighbors' doors and let them know he has this label of a conqueror. But actually, those myths are allegory for the way that Greece, represented by Zeus, king of the gods, took over different lands. So, you know, when they took over an island of people that had their own way of doing things, and now Greece has dominion over their rulings, then Zeus is said to have, you know, had relations with their queen, for example. So that is an allegorical tale that was taken more literally as something that happened as it was told. Another way that symbols can be represented is in metaphor. So we might tell a story, like, to use a modern myth example, The Giving Tree. That book is devastating, right? Because we see the tree in the way it gives itself and gives itself till there's nothing left. Mm-hmm. And we can take that as a metaphor for how we shouldn't treat ourselves that way, how we shouldn't give till there's nothing left, how we should make sure that we are nourishing ourselves and that our relationships are nourishing us in return. Because that boy could have just, like, found himself another chair. He did not need to, like, sit on the stump of his dead friend. Like, that book makes me so upset. But again, it's a metaphor.
It does.
So I try not to take it to heart too much. But as a kid, it really, it's a sad one.
But I think that's a testament to why symbolism is so important, because it speaks to something so deep inside of us. It awakens something, whether it be magical, emotional, political, you name it.
And
you
know, it stays with us. It
speaks to something deep. Yes.
Like,
yes.
I think of The Giving Tree more than I think of the fact that I shouldn't give of myself till I'm an empty cup. But I think of that story, and then it reminds me of the meaning behind it.
Yeah. And so for me, in contrast to that, is that story tells me not to take of people too much. Not to take so much of others that they're spent and they have nothing else to give except a stump of a life.
Yeah.
And that is what it speaks to me. It reminds me of not to take too much of others, to give as much as I take.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly it. Symbolism always means something different to different people. But that's why we love these conversations, because we get to explore that and we both can take more away from the story or from the representation.
Well, and another form of symbolism that actually can take on a magical essence of its own is an egregore. Think about it. When we're talking about a car, we refer to it as she. You know, she's acting up. We refer to money as a having its own mind, having its own energetic abilities. Suddenly, that symbolism that we've connected to that object or idea becomes its own magical tool, its own magical power, in a sense. So we can utilize that once we connect with that symbolism of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we wanted to just walk through some things that are going to have different meanings depending on your tradition, depending on your background. And a good way to tell if a tradition is for you is if you look up books from authors who are trained in that tradition and you read those books, and their readings on symbolism resonate with you, then that's probably a good tradition to look for training in, you know, or maybe that author themselves is a teacher that you might be interested in working in. Mm-hmm. So for example,
or even a deity.
Yeah, exactly. Some deities have like an energy to them that comes across a certain way to you, but not others. Like, that's usually an indication that you really are working with that deity. If that makes sense. Like, there's going to be commonalities, but like, everyone I know who works with Hecate has a really similar understanding of her. But some books I've read on her present her a little bit differently, like especially older books. And I don't know why that is really, but in the 90s, like, people were really, I don't know, they kind of pigeonholed things or they gave definitions in a way that felt one-sided. So, for example, Shekinah Mountain Water, she was a 90s author and a 70s and 80s folk singer as well. And her books, she has a book called Ariadne's Thread, and I read it with a women's group for 13 months. So we went through each chapter per month, took our time with it, lots of discussion. Mm-hmm. And in the end, we all kind of felt like it was a 3 out of 5 read, because some of her symbolism for things felt just like she picked it, like she needed something to represent it. So she put that there, you know, like the colors were one. Like, I've always been taught that air is represented by either purple for new beginnings and also kind of pulling on that spirit element. Like, you know, I don't know, purple always makes sense to me as like the spiritual color. Amethyst is the stone we go to when we're trying to, you know, enhance our third eye, for example. So that's purple for me. But then I've also heard yellow could be a good one for air. But she had blue in there. And blue is, I've always felt like that was water. But she just said, air is blue. Done. There was no like, because in the background, blah, blah, blah. This, yeah. So I found it hard to take that at face value. So I think that's, maybe that's just my perspective on it. But I like hearing why something is something according to someone.
Yeah, because everything's going to be different for individuals. You were talking about air and water. So for me, air, I often think of just pastels. So it could be any color in a pastel. But typically, like, look at the colors of a sunset. So you're going to have the purples in there, but you're going to have the reds, the oranges, the yellows. You know, even some storms will come off with a green hue. So that, like, weird green hue that you would see in some storms. So yeah, like, if there's no explanation behind it. Oh, and I just want to make this point real quick. So because we have so many creators out there that are either new to the craft or they're proclaimed in the craft, if they can't back up what they're putting out there, that's a red flag. Just a side note, because I know this is a big thing in the community right now. People are just in an uproar because they're finding out that their favorite creators were just basically pulling things out of their butt. And, you know, potentially that's what this author was doing. But, you know, if they can't back it up with why, with where they got the information, who taught them that, or how did they come to that conclusion even, then that's something that maybe you should question. Like, maybe that's not a symbolism for you. And maybe that's not a path for you. Maybe that's not a deity for you. Or, you know, maybe you need to explore it more and find out how you do resonate with that. What speaks directly to you?
Yeah. And there's no one answer. Maybe blue makes sense for air because of some cultural background or understanding or training she had. But the fact she didn't include it was for me the issue with that. So
yeah.
You know, since we're on the colors, we'll just talk about the other two elements and how some of those colors come out. For me, fire is always orange or red. And fire to me is passion. It's it's drive, but it's also control, because we know what happens when we don't control fires, right? And in many ways, it's the most dangerous element. So I think of orange as a creative color. I always use orange in my creativity spells, whether it's to finish something I'm working on, to find motivation to move on with it, or to, you know, with creation comes destruction. So sometimes I just finished editing Witch on the Juniata River. So I had an orange craft candle that I used to help me, like, really, really decide what needs to stay in here, what needs to be removed, what needs to be changed.
Yeah. And for me, red also symbolizes going into that, like, destructive, but it's aggravation, it's agitation, but also agitation, not just in a negative way, but in the way that it gets us moving. It gets us active. Makes us, you know, like anger. Yeah. Anger can be toxic. It can be rageful. It can be harmful, but it can also be that great activator that makes us seek change and seek ways that we can make change. You know, look at the political climate right now. There are so many people who are embodying fire energy, that red hot energy to create positive change. So it you know, has its drawbacks, but also has its great potentials there. And it depends on how we use it. If we use it in a negative way, it's going to be damaging. If we use it in a positive way, then this symbolism, we can really tap into that. You know, maybe you draw a flame on your hand or the alchemical symbol for fire on your hand when you need to remind yourself to get active and to be fierce and to be motivated and to take action on those things that matter to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And in my tradition, we use red, white, and black as our three main candles, because black and white, okay, we can figure those out, right? Those are like the extremes of magic. We could call it offensive and defensive magic if we want.
Offensive, yeah.
But then red is that action. It's that reminder that if we don't show up and actually do what we're trying to create a working to carry out, there's work after those candles are done, right? We have to move on with our goals in the real world. It's not just in that 30 minutes to an hour of spell work that the magic happens. It's in our actions and follow-up. So I always see those candles that way. And when people do cord cuttings, they also use a red candle, even though that's something that, you know, is activating. You know, a cord cutting is ending something, but in a way it's also activating it. So this can make us panic if we're in a bubble on our own and we read all these different ways to use a single color and we're like, oh my God, I don't know. I just don't know which color. But it's empowering too, because you're not going to pick the wrong one.
It is. Well, and just to tag on that, your color is red, black, and white. I also use red, black, and white in my coven and in my workings, but they mean different things. So red means life. It's life blood. It is the blood that keeps us alive, that keeps everything flowing. It is the symbol of flowing. So it can be associated with water as well.
Yeah.
Bodily fluids, that sort of thing. White is death. Not necessarily physical death, but it can be physical death, but it's usually the ending of an idea, of a chapter, of, you know, letting go of something, release, purity, that sort of thing. And then black is the symbol for gestation, for rebirth, for introspection, for going within and deciding your intentions, for deciding what works and what doesn't work and what direction you need to go, all that. So it's thought. So there's, you know, some variations on the same things. You know, my cords are red, black, and white. And I know you use the same cords in your tradition. So, but they just mean different things.
Yeah. Yeah. And that reminds me of like African traditions, like Yoruba as well. They have a specific understanding of white as the death color, similar to how you described it. Whereas in the West, especially in Abrahamic religions, which of course bleed into secular things, we think of white as a freeing color, a light color to, you know, it's energizing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And pink is another color that I see so much like back and forth about when to use pink candles. I've always used them the way I would use rose quartz. That's a good way to put it. Like I like to use pink candles when I need to do a working for love or for a loved one. So for example, I told a story a long time ago about a cat that ran away. And so I lit a pink candle asking for help guiding her back, and it worked. So I use pink in that way. It's not just like romantic love, you know, it's the kind of love we feel for all kinds of people and things.
Absolutely.
And earth, I think we almost always see green and brown.
Brown.
Because that's an obvious, we see that with our eyes and we accept that that is what nature looks like. Yeah. But if it's fall, maybe you're going to mix it up and you're going to bring out some reds and oranges. And
rust colors. Yeah. And that's, I think that's one key thing is what, especially when we need confirmation, like look at the natural world and where these colors show up. If you're not sure, you know, sit with a tree and watch it through the seasons and see what different colors show up in it. And, you know, I have a tree outside my window here. It is it's a tulip tree it's like a type of magnolia, I think, but it's, I think it's referred to out here as a tulip tree. And not only is it green and brown, but in the springtime, it's pink and white. It's beautiful. Mm. So, you know, that can also be an earth color. You know, look at flowers. How many flower colors can you identify in spring and summer? There's so many, you know, from deep purples to even some green petals for some flowers. So don't think that you have to box yourself in. Nothing is linear in this path. Absolutely nothing.
Are you ready to start living a magical life? Join me in my Patreon community where I'm sharing rituals for every Sabbat and full moon, weekly journal prompts, and new on the new moon articles highlighting new practices from around the world. Joining a community can be the thing you need to keep your practice active and engaging. For more information, visit patreon.com/Elise Wells or follow the community link on seekingnumina.com. When we talk about the elements, people are often thinking of land spirits or elementals that they can connect with, associated with each element. And we've done an episode on this back in season 2 or 3, not too long ago, where we talked about, you know, different cultural approaches to the elements. So I encourage you to go back to that, especially if you're looking for how to reach out to the elementals in your area. But what I always remind people is elementals sometimes are tradition-based. So there might be names that your tradition uses, but often for me, I've realized that they are localized. So I was taught, for example, in Earth, that we should call on the gnomes as the spiritual elemental of that element. And I've never felt a gnome, seen a gnome, heard from a gnome, talked to a gnome. I don't feel them. I don't think they're around me. They weren't there when I lived in Pennsylvania, not in Baltimore, and they're totally not here in Greece. But what I do use are the nymphs, the oreads, the mountain nymphs, kind of like a ethereal creature that's associated with mountains. And I also then, for water, I call on the nereids and naiads, the river spirits and sea spirits. Yep. So, and I talk more about this in depth in that episode, so I won't go over it again. But that is the kind of localized help I call on. Because when we really go back to it, why do we want to know these elementals? Are we memorizing them for fun? Or is it because in our workings, we're calling them in as guardians and protectors or participants in this working? If it's the latter, then you want to make sure they're there. Long story short, same with fire. I don't get the salamanders thing. But call on dragons. They're great. You might want to call on the dragons if they resonate, you know? Or you might not need to call on any. Maybe you just call on the natural figures associated with that, the animals. Like, I when I call on fire, I usually say creatures of heat and poison.
Mm.
That's how I call on the fire elements. Or if I'm in the Middle East, this feels better. Like when I lived there, I would call on the jinn. Here, I don't feel it as much, but that they're another option. That makes sense. They also could be for air if you wanted, because since they're they have flight. So find what works for your path for when it comes to elementals.
I feel like we're a broken record, but that's really what it boils down to. You know, when we say that, find what works for you. And, you know, that's what this path is about. It's, we have no doctrine. We have no dogma telling us what to believe, how to believe it, when to believe it, why, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, you know, if something is working for you, use it. You don't have to explain yourself. You don't have to justify it. And I think that's such an important message.
Unless you're in a book or teaching others, then you have to explain it.
it doesn't matter unless, you have others around you. So, that's one benefit to being a solitary is that you don't have to explain shit to anybody.
you do. You
just do it. Exactly.
And that goes with the animal symbolisms, too. Like, I saw this hare and I was like, oh, I'm being led to my next path. Like, I'm keeping my eyes open. But somebody else might see a hare and be like, oh, that reminds me of the time I saw a hare before. And this happened right after. So that's a personal meaning. And the thing is, symbolism, especially when it's put out there for you by the universe like that, it's because the universe, deity, land spirits, whoever's trying to get in contact with you, whoever's trying to give you this sign, your spirit guides, that sign is going to come to you in the way you're going to understand it. So if your message is something that, like, your first instinct is that this message is something that makes sense because of, and you instantly have a reason why it feels that way, then there's a good chance that that is what it means.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's look at animals a little closer. Someone can see a hummingbird and think it means one thing while someone else thinks another. So some of the divination I practice regularly is animal divination. And it's relies heavily on birds because they're very predominant in my area, but it also, you know, mammals and lizards and that sort of thing, and even bugs. But so to me, like, a hummingbird means joy. So when that symbolism comes to you, and typically when you read animal symbolism in divination practices like this, it's going to be under an account, and it's going to be an encounter that is unusual. So maybe the bird lands on your windowsill and won't go away, or it lands in front of your car and you have to brake so you don't hit it, and then it flies away, or it lands in a tree right next to you and is like singing loudly to you, that sort of thing. And it doesn't seem to be afraid of your presence. That's usually a good indicator that this is a message.
Yeah.
So, like, going back to the hummingbird, we used to have hummingbirds that would come to our house all the time. So now when I see a hummingbird, it reminds me of my family. It reminds me of home. After my brother died when I was 9 years old, we had a mourning dove that would come to the house constantly. And it was not afraid of us. It kept coming back to us. Well, my brother's, one of my brother's favorite birds were mourning doves. So to me, now when I see a mourning dove under a unusual circumstance, that's a message to me that he's present, or that he's, you know, looking out for me type thing. So when you have these kinds of symbols throughout your path, and I think that's a good practice in for witches, is to always be open to symbols, always be looking for them, not necessarily trying to place meaning on something, but find the meaning that's already there. So mourning doves can mean mourning, because that is one of their symbols, is their cooing sounds like a crying woman. So it can mean you need to let go of something, you need to transition, you need to let something die and mourn it and move on. But to me, it means that a family member is looking out for me, and there's a spirit present that I'm familiar with. But it can also mean that I need to let something go. So it depends on, you know, how it shows up, when it shows up, and what's going on in your life or in the lives of others that you are divining for, to what that symbol is going to mean. So like I said, it's, nothing's linear here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's always good to have an understanding of multiple perspectives on what a symbol could mean, because you might see one in different divination. Right. If you're scrying and you swear there's the image of a hawk, and you know, you look up what a hawk means, you might get lots of meanings, but there's going to be one that stands out, or maybe one stands out and you're like, huh, maybe that's what I'm supposed to do. And then you get another sign that kind of confirms that for you. Cause signs aren't ever, they're never really once and done. I wouldn't have thought of the hair thing if I hadn't seen it like several times in a couple of days.
Right. Right.
And in different ways. It's not all just the algorithm on one social media platform or something. Like, it's, you know, it's in the real world. It's in conversations with friends who couldn't have even known what I was talking about or thinking about.
Yes.
That's how it's going to come to you. It's going to be through multiple ways.
It also can just, it'll show up in seemingly unusual ways.
Yeah.
It's going to be a string of things that tend to happen. Symbols don't tend to knock you upside the head. They can. But most of the energy work that we do in the craft is not going to be screaming in your face, unless you have been ignoring it for a very long time and it needs to get your attention.
Are you enjoying the show? If you are, we'd really appreciate a 5-star review. It helps us to reach more listeners like you and to keep doing the Magic Kitchen podcast. Thank you. What brings me comfort when I'm analyzing symbols and trying to understand the meaning behind the messages I think I'm getting is syncretic universality. And that's the concept, that's the academic term for the way multiple cultures, multiple myth cycles across the whole world have common themes. So, for example, in any culture I know of, hawks or falcons represent vigilance and usually some way of stepping into your leadership. That's usually what the hawk represents. Or myth cycles, for example, there's almost always in any tradition some story of a great flood. There's some cyclical understanding of life. They don't always call it, you know, mother, maid, and crone like we do as witches. They might call it, you know, the cycle of creation or something different. But it's that same idea that we go through phases and then we die and then maybe we come back. And maybe we don't literally come back, right? Like Abrahamic religions don't believe in reincarnation, but they do kind of talk about, you know, how you live on in a legacy, something like that. And the way that that deities cycle as well, there's like a representation in myth cycles of a son or daughter of a god being sacrificed or dying and then being reborn. We see that all across myth. You know, in Norse mythology, Baldur dies despite all of everybody's efforts to keep him alive. And Dionysius dies every December, and his death is celebrated, and then his rebirth is celebrated. Jesus definitely took a little bit from some of those other guys. You know, Zeus kills Cronus.
Yep.
Cronus killed, you know, tried to usurp his parents. Like, we see these cyclical reminders, and they're symbols of our lives on this earth, but they're also symbols that can help us through our current life on this earth. So when we study the meaning of symbolism and we reach out from the culture or path that we're actually a part of, we start to be able to confirm the path we're a part of because we start to see the way all of these other things overlap or are similar. And then that gives us more power to interpret divination and to help ourselves on our own path and to have meaningful conversations with those around us as well.
Yeah. And really symbolism does so much for us, especially in our magical life, in our spiritual life. And every piece of a story is going to have some sort of symbolism connected to it. So symbolism, what it does is it opens our subconscious and allows us to use the language of the subconscious to help us solidify messages, help us change mindsets, and to set intentions. And this is important when we're reading a story or going into mythology, looking at the different symbolisms and how they help guide us. Symbolism also can help us ignite that sense of wonder, tapping into that childlike sense, that childlike wonder, engaging with our younger self, our child self, so that magic can not only happen and flow and occur, but we can also start healing that part of ourselves when we are in need of that.
It gives us that reminder of why we're on this path in the first place.
It
goes both ways. Like, a lot of us come to this path because we feel like we need meaning, and then we're on the path and we start getting too much meaning.
And it overwhelms us.
But when we remember that we're on this path for, you know, for so many things, but at the core of it, because we enjoy it. It's because it nourishes us. It sustains us. It empowers us.
Yeah. And symbolism really connects us to something bigger than ourselves.
Yeah.
It takes us beyond the mundane, the day-to-day, the ruts we tend to fall into. And it, you know, oh, the 9 to 5, oh, that's my life. No, it's not. There's something bigger here for us to experience. And we can experience that through mythology, through storytelling, through just looking for symbols, looking for synchronicities in our life. And it really helps us connect to our deities, helps us connect to our path, helps us connect to our magic in a more substantial way rather than this just concept, this ethereal concept in our head that has no tangible substance. Suddenly it has substance. Even if you can't taste it, smell it, you know, sit on it, whatever. You can with a book, maybe, but but it's still, the symbolism is that element that really, it dials it into a more focused aspect, energetic aspect. So, like you were mentioning, symbolism of, you know, or floods in stories and that sort of thing. So a flood has its own symbolism. Not only is it a symbolism of cleansing, of purging, it's also a symbol of the womb water, rebirth, the feminine energy of bringing something new into existence. How powerful is that? To me, that's incredibly powerful. And when we start looking deeper into words, because what are words? They're spells, right? When we start looking into the deeper meaning of the words we use and mm-hmm. the construction of our lore, the construction of our mythologies, the construction of our spells, then we can see the symbolisms in there and how they tap into that deeper frequency. Merry meet.
Merry part.
And merry meet again. Thank you for joining us on the Magic Kitchen podcast. Please visit my website, leandrawitchwood.com, for news, information, and more episodes.
I'm Elise Wells, and I can be found at Seeking Numina on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and seekingnumina.com. That's Seeking, N-U-M-I-N-A.